on this week's episode of the We Don't Know Either podcast, we issue a correction.
Or a clarification, you know, it's kind of our thing.
Per usual.
Yeah.
And we also talk races of the dog and politic variety. But before the episode, a word from our sponsor. Your dreams are just a dandy loan away. Now through April 30th, take 50% off a 24-month personal loan. Rates are as low as 3.64%. Apply easily online now at advfcu.org/loan sale for details.
Enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into episode number 316 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
All right. We have a quick kind of correction that we want to lead off with. From last week, we were talking about heights of buildings in D.C. because it's a very low-lying city compared to most other very tall cities.
We were actually talking about the heights of government buildings in various states.
Oh, yeah. That was my fact.
The Baton Rouge office building being the tallest.
That was my fact.
Not office, but City Hall, Baton Rouge. Whatever it is. So I'm sure I just got that wrong and we'll get another correction for next week.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember. It was a week ago, so who knows? I forgot that that was my fact until you just said it.
But right, yeah.
Now I remember.
So basically, I made a comment that Washington, D.C. has laws about the heights of buildings.
Mm-hmm.
That part of it was correct. From that moment forward, I treaded into some murky waters.
Oh, okay.
I had said something along the lines of a very common urban legend that the heights of the buildings are restricted to the Washington Monument. That is not the case.
Okay.
There have been actually two different acts of Congress about the heights of the buildings.
Right, because D.C. can't do that for themselves.
Correct, yeah, because everything has to be passed by Congress. So the original was the Buildings Act of 1899, and then the Height of Buildings Act in 1910 followed that. And basically it says that the heights of the buildings in residential areas have one height restriction, and that the heights of buildings in commercial areas have another height restriction. And that in commercial areas, where all of these buildings are that we're talking about, the restriction is actually either 130 feet or the width of the road that it's on.
Oh, and this is in D.C. specifically.
In D.C. specifically. It's whichever is shorter of the two.
Oh, I never heard of that, that it can be
the width is new for me.
Yeah, so it's whatever. So if you're on, like, K Street, which is probably, I have no idea how wide K Street is, but it's probably wider than 130 feet, then it's 130 feet.
Maybe, yeah.
So, at least at certain points. Yeah,
absolutely.
I thought it was top of the Capitol building you can be taller than, but that is a myth that I was very, if I were a person that were going to bet, I would feel very strongly in the bet that, yeah, that is a law, and that's definitely the thing. And
being somebody from here, that's you hear it, you go, okay. That makes sense. Sure. I have no reason to question that. And then it just becomes part of what's in your brain.
What I find staggering about the whole situation is we're determining the height of buildings based on a 100-year-old law.
That is correct.
Like, so, technology may have advanced a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Slightly since then.
Just a little bit.
I think you may have hit on a much larger problem with laws in general.
I think I might have.
So, on that point, I have a couple of really quick interesting facts about the heights of buildings in D.C.
Oh,
super quick. So, what is the tallest the tallest quote unquote building in Washington D.C.? Neither of these actually count.
The
Hughes Memorial Tower, which is just a radio tower down on Georgia Avenue.
Oh, okay. And that's taller than the monument.
And that is taller than the monument by a lot. It's 761 feet tall. Right, is the radio tower. The monument.
I was going to say it. Yeah. I know. It's 555, 556?
555 feet.
Okay.
You are correct.
Cool. I was like, I knew that one.
That is the second highest structure.
Structure.
But what is the tallest building?
The tallest building?
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start. Building. I don't.
You've definitely seen it.
I'm sure. If it's the tallest building, I have looked in the sky.
Yeah.
I don't
Any guesses? No? All right. It's the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception.
I did know that. Dang it.
Yeah, down by Catholic University. Second is the old post office pavilion.
Oh.
So, which is now known by a different name of which we will not speak.
Got it.
That then took me down the rabbit hole of, well, what about the Pentagon? Because the Pentagon has like 400 underground stories, right?
And one of the largest office buildings in the country.
Yeah.
By square footage wise.
Yeah. So,
or so we think.
Not correct. The Pentagon is not a 400-story office tower that is sunk into the ground. It's actually only 7 stories.
You sounded very confident.
I yes. really was super confident. It's 7 stories tall. There's 2 basement levels, and there's 5 that are above ground. Hmm. So the above ground portion of it is 71 feet tall. So not exactly the tallest building in the world. It is the largest office building. However, you are correct on that front.
Cool.
It is like 6.6 million square feet.
Yeah, that's a lot of square feet.
For a comparison, it is 3 times larger than the square footage of the Empire State Building.
Whoa.
See, there's a stat for you.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, anyway, that's all of my building height facts going down the rabbit hole. And thank you very much to the, 36, 55 people who emailed us and told us how wrong we were. So.
Yeah. As I said in all of my replies, there's a reason this podcast is called We Don't Know Either.
Oh, absolutely. So, anywho, so moving from heights of buildings in D.C., mm-hmm. I have my interesting fact, which Ooh. Is about the politics of D.C.
Okay, I thought you were going to have a building-related fact.
Yeah, no, that probably would be better than what I have, but we're going to go with this one.
Oh, okay.
All right, so recently, mm-hmm. Beto O'Rourke mm-hmm. declared as a candidate for president.
Yeah, I feel like it's the millionth one.
Yeah, absolutely, and that got me thinking as to what is the largest number of candidates that have ever declared for, like, a single party? Like, what's the most? The Republicans back in 2016 had a huge mm-hmm. number mm-hmm. of people that were running. I was trying to figure out how many were there, and then have there ever been more or less, or what's the most number? Because that would make a great interesting fact.
Yeah.
I could not do that.
Oh, no.
So what I did end up coming up with is, with Beto O'Rourke being the most recent, mm-hmm. how many...
Until the minute that this podcast
yeah.
or the 5 minutes before trivia starts.
Right. I mean, honestly, we've been sitting in this room for about 8 minutes. We're probably outdated already. Yeah. We just haven't checked the news yet. So, but with the line drawn at Beto O'Rourke, okay. How many people have officially declared as running for president for the Democratic Party? And that's okay. not Democratic people. It's people running in the Democratic side of the
sure.
election.
Okay, so this is, when you're saying running, it's not just, hey, I'm running. This is legally filed the paperwork.
Yes, the people have actually filed the paperwork.
Okay, that's. I mean, I feel like that's a good line, because I'm yeah, like, I'm running right. for president,
yeah,
which I am not.
There's already been somebody who's declared and suspended, and I don't think that person filed the paperwork, so that makes it really easy. I mean, do you really have to pull out if you never actually file the paperwork?
Do you have to file the paperwork before you can announce?
There are certain rules around it, and going back to our previous correction, I'm not going to even bother trying to get into what those are, but there is a timeline of when you can announce and when you have to file, and I don't know what the relationship is between those two.
And just to get all of the social media handles that you would need, plus the websites, plus...
Right, you have to prioritize the most important parts about running for office. There's number of Twitter followers, there's... hair and makeup and wardrobe, and then there's things like policy and
those are all secondary. Seriously, having a website, that's a huge deal. Like I think for a while the Dallas Cowboys was owned by somebody else, and it was a porn site, right? And they had to spend a ton of money.
So it's whitehouse.com, I believe, was a porn site.
Yeah,
for the longest time, because the official one was whitehouse.org.
Yeah.
It was whitehouse.gov.
Yeah, we're not advocating going to a porn site unless you want to, but we will not be including that in the link dump.
It's a judgment-free zone here.
Judgment-free zone, but we're not going to include porn in the link dump unless it's a dirty, sexy trivia thing, which has already happened
Day. Yeah, that's much later from now.
But back to your question.
Yeah, how many people have declared as candidates for the Democratic side of the election with Beto O'Rourke being the line drawn?
Got it.
Okay.
Okay. I you got... Harris, you know, you got, right. I would assume Sanders counts.
Sanders does
right?
count, yes.
Right.
Even though he's an independent, he has filed as running in the Democratic primary.
And as I understand, when he's in Congress as well, he's an independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats as well. So
correct.
Oh, so nice word.
Thank you.
But doesn't that, and I don't know what that word means, what, but doesn't that mean he just sits over there?
Yeah, it just kind of gets...
And he talks to, like, this is his clique, and he can sit at the cool table over here.
He does whatever he wants, but, because he is an independent.
He's a loner.
Like, when you're counting seats and stuff like that, I think that's where it...
He generally goes this way.
Exactly.
Sexually active band geeks. Sorry. Mean Girls reference, hey. Okay, so, Cory Booker, I could, like, name a few of them, but I think that there's a lot of people that I probably haven't heard of, because I'm not up on my politics. So I'm going to guess, like, 14-ish?
Okay.
I think it's definitely double digits, but I feel good about the 14 number.
I would agree. I think it's higher.
Oh.
It just seems like every day somebody's announcing. I'm just like you. It's people that I don't necessarily know. But there was that one congressman that announced in the middle of a blizzard in Minnesota.
Oh.
Which yep. just made me laugh. I forget her name.
It's Klobuchar.
Klobuchar. Thank yep. you. I'm going to go 25.
25. Okay.
It just feels like that.
Yeah. The big thing in this election cycle that I'm noticing is that there's people that are announcing their intention to think about potentially forming
right.
a exploratory committee to look into the possibility of potentially declaring themselves as maybe a candidate for one party or the other.
Right.
So.
I wish they would let us vote on the next Bachelor or Bachelorette, but that's a whole other...
That's how you get the voting rate up right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation. Okay, so 14 and 25, those are our guesses. What do we got?
Lindsay is the closest without Ooh. Going hey. Over. There are actually 16 people that are currently declared and going. It's Booker, Buttigieg, Castro, Delaney, Gabbard, Gillibrand, Harris, Hickenlooper, Inslee, Klobuchar, Messam, O'Rourke, Sanders, Warren, Williamson, and Yang.
Well done.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
So by the time you are potentially listening to this podcast, either 3 days or 10 days or 2 years into the future, that number has ballooned up to 712 and shrunk down to one.
Cool. That's a really good, interesting fact. Michael, do you have a segue from it?
I do.
Okay. I was going to say,
it's a stretch.
I do not. All right.
It's going to hurt. I'm going to hurt myself.
I have a very obvious one I should have said.
Oh, then go ahead.
Okay. So am I going to actually... jump you here.
Bring it.
So, politics. This is for the race for president.
Yes.
My interesting fact is about a specific race as well. There is a winner. There are some losers, as it tends to be. So I want to talk about the Iditarod.
Hey, you got it.
I practiced saying it repeatedly prior to the podcast. I was like, well, if it's my interesting fact, I better at least pronounce what the thing is.
Uh-huh.
A lot. So what do you guys know about? What do you guys know about it?
It's a dog race.
That is correct.
In Alaska. It's a sled race, mm-hmm. technically. It's up in Alaska. It goes from, I want to say it's like Nome to Juneau, but that's probably not right.
Nome is one of the cities and the Anchorage is involved. And sometimes they do a northern to southern route. Okay. But yeah, Nome is one of the towns involved.
I know that the drivers are called mushers.
Great job. Michael, are you participating at all?
I said Alaska.
I know that it takes like 3 weeks to do the race.
Well, that actually leads me to my interesting fact.
Okay.
I have a couple different facts related to this sled race because I think it's super interesting. It's kind of one of those willpower things. And the dogs are amazing. They can do incredible things. So what was the fastest Iditarod race time? So what's the record? This was set in 2017. And for the record, it starts in March. So the 2019 one just ended. So the next one won't be until 2020.
Okay.
So the 2019 one just ended. But 2017 stands as the fastest posted race time. So what is it?
Michael?
I have no concept. You know what? I have no like frame of reference. I'm going to say like 5 days.
5 days. That's not a bad guess, even though I said I think it was like 3 weeks. I think that's probably, you're probably closer.
What I had heard from Lindsay is it starts in March.
Uh-huh.
And
the current one is over.
And the current one is over, right. Exactly.
Would it help if I gave you specific miles, rough mileage?
Yes, that'd
be super helpful.
So it's about 938 miles. So it's Anchorage to Nome, Alaska. Okay. So you were
what
correct in that.
What is it with you and trekking across ice for miles? And how long it takes?
I have had a theme where I've been going to the gym a lot. So there's been a lot of motivational posters, and I've been researching and really into people and animals doing incredible feats because I find it inspiring. I'm like, if that guy can run across Alaska by himself, I can do these extra 10 minutes on the treadmill.
On a treadmill, yeah, in a climate-controlled gym.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'd like to change my answer then.
Okay, Michael?
I'm going to say 11 days.
11 days is the record, all right.
That was exactly what I was going to go, so I'll say 12.
All right. So, Michael, you're closer, but you are both over. Aww. So the record in 2017 was set by Mitch Seavey. He was the oldest and fastest person ever to win the race. He crossed the line in Nome in 8 days, 3 hours, 40 minutes, and 13 seconds.
That is fast for that far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's 100-plus miles a day.
Yes, it is
a lot. They also, and I don't know if this counts in the time, but during the actual race, there's a mandatory 24-hour rest period to give the dogs and have them be able to reset.
Yeah, I know that the race over the years has come up against animal cruelty and all of those kinds of things, and I know that they are attempting to address that and make the situation better and everything else, but...
Yeah, I can't speak to specifically how or what they do for the dogs, but all of the mushers and sponsors involved, you know, they're very well cared for. This is what they're trained to do.
Yep.
So take it as you will. But 8 days is the record. I don't know if that counts the 24-hour mandatory stop. So there's 12 to 16 dogs per team.
Okay.
What I also learned as I went down this wormhole, how many dogs have to cross the finish line attached to your sled for it to count as you crossing it? So you have 12, 16 dogs per team, but how many actually have to be harnessed up crossing that line for that to count? For you to count as somebody that finished it?
I'm going to say half.
Half?
So that would be 6 to 8.
Six to eight.
So 7.
Okay, Let's go seven.
See, that's about what I was thinking. But kind of in response to the animal cruelty stuff, I think they got to keep that pretty high. I'm going to say 10.
Okay.
10? All right. It's only 5.
Oh.
So just 5 dogs needed to cross it. And then my last bonus.
The rest of them are all bundled up on the sled being pushed by the guy. Like
I think
you said,
so.
You said harnessed up to it. You didn't say running.
Yeah, I think
you just get all 16 dogs on a sled with some like doggy chow, like warm doggy chow in the middle, covered in blankets. And,
yeah.
You know, nice and happy. And the guy's just pushing them across the finish line.
They say it must be on the tow line at the finish line.
Okay.
So I would assume if they can't go on anymore, they.
I mean, you can still hook it to the tow line and stick him on the sled. Yeah.
They have 26 checkpoints throughout the entire race.
Right.
And recently a guy had like a 5-hour head start and then his dogs got really mad and
kind of
got in a fight and they just quit.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, I guess I'm done.
Yeah, he was way ahead.
Side note, the dog's name was Joey and I thought that was really hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay, last fact about this. So this guy, Mitch Seavey, was the oldest and fastest to ever do it. So how old was he when he set this record? So not only was he the oldest when he... You know, one, he's the oldest person ever to win it, but he's also at the same time set the fastest speed, which cool.
Right.
Get your records, man.
No, awesome.
Get your records, Mitch.
Yeah. It's like your Wii Perfect bowling guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. See, Michael, I think this could be a loaded question.
I think so.
Right. This is one of those like, okay, he's the oldest to do it. So what was he like, 68 or 59 or something like that? Or is like he was the oldest to do it and nobody over the age of 12 has survived. You know, kind of. So I'm gonna go with my initial thought rather than thinking Lindsay's trying to trap us, and I'm gonna say he was 56.
Okay, I was gonna say like 67.
Okay.
Nick, you're closest. 57.
Uh-huh. All right.
So his son Dallas,
uh-huh.
they have I don't know what they're eating in the CV family, but this is their thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So his son Dallas was the youngest musher to ever win in 2012. How old was he?
19.
16. No, both off. It's 25.
All right.
So I thought that was pretty interesting that it's and these guys have won. Like if you look up the list of folks that have won this, the CVs have just kind of been crushing it. Like
it's like
a lot.
One family that wins over and over.
Yeah, seriously.
Again.
2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017. All were either Dallas
Father
or Mitch.
Son.
Yeah. So kind of interesting. And I really like that on the website they list out the lead dogs so they get credit. So in 2019, Mero and Lucy,
uh-huh.
way to go.
Awesome.
Cool. There you go.
I love dog facts. Michael,
okay.
What's your segue?
My segue, well, as with any races, you do need to track time.
That's
correct.
True.
And
yeah.
speed.
Oh, okay.
And one way, a good way to do that in maybe in some auto races, for example. Is using radar guns.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at me. I got there.
Yeah.
So, I was looking it up. This was something I just kind of stumbled across that I found really interesting. What musical accessory is...
Wait. Say that word again.
Accessory?
Okay.
is used to calibrate radar guns.
A musical accessory used to calibrate radar guns.
What musical accessory?
Right. Well, let's start naming musical accessories. A pitch pipe. A tuning fork.
A guitar pick.
A guitar pick. A metronome.
So they're using this device
yep.
in radar guns.
It gets included when you purchase a radar gun. and it's used to calibrate, but instead of having a note on it, it has the speed on it.
Okay.
And the idea is you use this accessory.
Uh-huh.
And Lindsay's very confused right now. But you use this accessory, and then you aim the radar gun at it.
And that sets the...
And if it's within 10%,
right,
then it's properly calibrated. If it's not, you send it back to the manufacturer, and they calibrate it.
This thing white balances the...
Yeah.
The radar gun.
I'm getting it. I'm just trying to picture what would move... Because that's what you're really testing, right?
It has to be motion. So yeah. It's either like a tuning fork that's moving like super fast.
Yeah. That's or I don't know what they're called, but it's the
metronome.
The needle. Yeah, with the needle.
With the tick, 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 tick.
Yeah, or the one that it's on a lot of amps and things where the needle goes to what the level is. You know what I'm talking about. I don't know the name of it, so I clearly will not know the answer to this question. Okay, Michael, do you want to give us a hint? Are we close?
You guys are right there.
Have we named it yet?
You have.
Okay, so tuning fork.
It is a tuning fork.
All right.
So the tuning fork gets stamped
with. We got there together.
So this is actually a paper out of the physics department at UPenn.
Okay, cool. I've heard of them.
Yep. Solid school.
Yeah, yeah.
Philly,
what's up?
Yeah, the tuning fork gets stamped with a miles per hour on it.
Okay.
And the idea is you hit this tuning fork and you aim your radar gun at it. And
okay. If the number comes back correct...
Then
you're good to go.
Then you're good to go.
So if I get pulled over for speeding and the cop doesn't have his tuning fork with him, can I get out of my ticket?
I mean, this is something I've heard in a lot of traffic stops and stuff like that, whether it's the radar gun, whether it's the speeding cameras, whether it's, you know, I've also heard this with DUI cases, the breathalyzer.
Uh-huh.
That if that equipment's not properly calibrated, then it gives off a false reading, and it causes all kinds of issues.
Correct.
from a prosecutorial side.
Yeah, that sounds like another one of those urban legends. Like if you wrap yourself in the flag, then you can't be considered a, you know, like the magic ways to get out of court that don't actually work.
The We Don't Know Either podcast. It's not.
they happen. They're just rare.
I mean,
the police departments are pretty good about making sure their stuff's working.
I would imagine that you should calibrate the thing. Like it's like we test the levels before we record the podcast. If you're going to go out and catch speeders,
right,
you test
your
radar
equipment before you go out. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
For the last Trump,
you tune your guitar.
So, right.
So I have a personal breathalyzer that I have that clearly.
Do you though?
Do you? Yeah.
Right now I have a brick that's not calibrated.
That's probably more accurate.
I was told it would be here for the drunk podcast, and I was lied to.
It was here.
It was here. It
just
wasn't
like
working.
It's just like you said. It's a piece of plastic that has no point.
Where is your tuning fork?
I don't have a radar gun.
I know. I was saying in relation to the breathalyzer.
Yep.
I think the bottom line here is that you shouldn't speed. It's bad. And,
yes.
And don't even bother testing the radar guns.
Fair. Okay. So the last one as we wrap up. Are you finished with your?
Yeah. No,
okay,
that was cool. It. I'm done.
Oh, no, it was a good fact. So I
Short,
looked
sweet,
up.
To the point.
How fast... Because people use radar guns on dogs.
Uh-huh.
So how many miles per hour can the Siberian Husky run?
How many miles per hour?
Yeah, so what is the top speed of a Siberian Husky? Yes.
Okay.
Faster than me.
That's definitely true.
Okay. So it's somewhere between 0 and 1.
Hey, on a good day, I can get to about 3.
Uh-huh. At least in short bursts.
Exactly.
What, 16 miles an hour? What's the fastest person?
Usain Bolt?
Yeah. He I guess they get up to like 24.
Cheetahs are 70 to 75 miles per hour, if that helps you.
Yeah.
So
it's
it is less
than
that. Yeah.
I want to say, yeah, like those top athletes can get to 21, 22 kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like I've seen it in football games where they'll have the extra stats. Cause
I love that lower third. I live for those lower thirds.
Yeah.
Like, I see you, Kyron. I see you.
Right. All the sports science, like it takes 3 steps to hit 28 miles an hour.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what's your guess?
I'm going to say 29
seems high. I'm going to say 1 mile per hour.
1 mile.
You're going to Price is Right rules me.
Uh-huh. I've been close and wrong on every guess so far today, so I'm going Price is Right rules.
Michael, you are correct.
Oh.
Hey.
It is 28 miles per hour is the top speed of the Siberian Husky, which I think is super interesting, super fast. And the top speed for a human record is about 27 miles per hour. And
okay.
That's the actual top.
There's so some pretty equivalent.
Yeah, and there's some scientists that feel like humans could reach up to 35, 40 miles an hour eventually, but obviously we're not quite there yet.
Give it time.
Give
Usain
it time,
Bolt
yeah.
has kids with, I don't know, Jackie Joyner Kersee, and we're good.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, the lion's 50, the antelope 61. So I think it's pretty interesting. Animals are fast, and we're fast because we're going to wrap this up.
That's right. I think animals are fast, secret phrase.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. Animals are fast.
We put it at the end this time. Yes, animals are fast. The lamest of the phrases, but
but probably the most accurate.
But if you know the secret phrase, you'll now have bonus facts to back up your phrase knowledge.
That is correct.
Yeah. So animals are fast. Animals are fast. That's your secret phrase. And this has been the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
We don't know either.
Bye.